What's up? Welcome to episode 316 of the PS4 Blackcast. I am JZM. With us this week is Isley.
Yo.
And Messiah is unfortunately not feeling well. She should not be joining us today.
But you didn't fuck up the intro.
No, I didn't. I made sure not to. And I definitely didn't say her name before yours.
I know. You didn't fuck it up either way.
Yep. But we will be able to talk about Sekiro, I suppose, if we want to, the ending. I know she's not at the end yet, at least since last spoken to her. Michael hadn't, he was on the end fight, but he hadn't beaten it yet.
I love that she considers herself at the end because Michael is beating it for her.
Well, she'll eventually get there. I think it's just because they're bouncing back and forth and she was so busy and she was playing another game, I think Animal Crossing as well. So it helps, especially if, you know, she's tired from work and doesn't really want to play. I mean, I've had this much, like, do I really want to play, like, a game that requires my attention this much right now after this shitty day? It's like, but we'll go ahead and jump to the news. I'm going to kind of skip new releases. I don't think there's anything notable from this week, but we'll go ahead and get to the news here. Apparently, Laura Bailey has wrapped up her work on Last of Us Part 2. Neil Druckmann tweeted out a picture of him and Laura Bailey, I guess after their final day of performance capture. So now, of course, maybe there could be like some pickups down the line, but I'm assuming they must have gotten everything they needed, all the major stuff. So that's cool to see. Then we also got, unfortunately, today they're doing the Star Wars celebration this week, and I think the rumor is that the Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order trailer will drop at 11:30. So it's 11:16 right now, so we're going to miss that. Unfortunately, we'll have to talk about that next time, I guess. But there, we did get word from Respawn Entertainment's bosses, Vince Venpella, saying that there will be... He took the stage at the Star Wars Celebration in Chicago and gave a little bit of information. He mentioned that the game's single-player, story-based, and there's no multiplayer, no microtransactions, and then, of course, the crowd cheered because you say no microtransactions and people cheer. But yeah, there...
That's where we set the bar now.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what the trailers, especially since we've got the trailer for episode 9 dropped this week as well. So now we'll get the trailer for The Fallen Order. Of course, that was just a teaser for the movie. I'm curious if it would just be a teaser for this. I figure it must be because that's the typical cycle. You get the teaser and then maybe at E3. Hopefully you don't do that. See more at E3. And then we have to wait.
That's the worst.
Yeah, like teaser and then actual full gameplay trailer there. But I wonder when, I'd be curious to see when it comes out. What else do we have here? Also, there is apparently Square Enix did a detailed history of FF7 in a new documentary. This is from an article on Twinfinite. Let's see, more than 22 years after release, Square Enix has posted a documentary about the development of Final Fantasy VII on their official website, titled Inside Final Fantasy VII. This documentary features several original team members who had major influences on the sights and sounds for one of the most beloved JRPGs of all time. Quote, "When you say Final Fantasy VII, the first thing I think of is Midgar," states Yusuke Nora, the game's original art director, during the documentary's introduction. The first scene where it zooms out and then zooms back in again, even for us, when we watched that, we all got goosebumps. So that's interesting. I'll have to check out that documentary and see... Yeah, it's up on YouTube as well. You can watch it there. It's on their Final Fantasy YouTube channel. It got posted on the...
I always wish I played Final Fantasy VII when it was popular, because I feel like I missed out on like a cultural aspect of gaming.
Well, it would have been weird because in 97, I mean, you wouldn't have known necessarily that... I mean, your metric for popular would have been like, oh, you know... Five of my friends played, if all your friends play video games, you know what I mean? Like, when I played it, it was like my brother or someone had it, I forget who, and he played it, and it was like, and I played Final Fantasy 1 on NES when I was a kid, and it was like, eh, whatever. Didn't play 2 or 3 or any of the other ones. And then 7 came around, and I forget who introduced it to me, but I played it and I enjoyed it, but I had no idea, like, this is, like, you know, at the time, such a huge game. I remember seeing it. To me, it was big because the first time I saw video game commercials on TV was for Final Fantasy VII.
Right.
But, yeah, it's like, I wish I could pinpoint the moment, like, when I realized that it was a big deal. Like, because now, you know, like 22 years later, you realize the hindsight, yeah, this is a huge game. But, you know, what we get sales milestones nowadays, like, oh, you know, Apex Legends got 2 million players in a day and now 50 million. It's like, I want to know, like, how quickly did FF7 sell at the time? You know what I mean? But
right. Well, for me, it's like, yeah, I don't think I even knew about FF7 until I was older. And I remember going back one day, and I want to say this was like in college, maybe. And I was going back, going through like my old games and things, like PlayStation 1 games, Super Nintendo games, just all the old gaming systems I had. And realizing I owned FF7 and just being like, I don't remember playing this at all as a kid. Like, it just, it's not a memory I have. And I've always wondered, like, did I even play it as a kid? And I have like vague memories of the story, but it's tough to tell if those memories of the story come from myself or just from the social aspect of hearing other people talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah, it's, I mean, that's from so far back. Yeah, it'd be definitely interesting. I'm always curious about people, for any game really, where they play it, when it first comes out, when it first starts to rise in popularity, or if they play it way later. Like, you know, they skipped a console generation, and then that game gets an HD remaster on PS4 or Xbox or something, and then they play it there. Like, what's that feeling like? Which is, I kind of experienced with people who play, Twitch streamers that I follow, who play Bloodborne for the first time, who never played it, you know, back when it came out, and that's fairly recent. But then, like, there's that YouTube show I was talking about in Discord called Goldframe Reviews, which the lady who does them, she played Bioshock for the first time. And of course, that was, what, 2007 when that came out, I think. 2007, 2009, something like that.
Long time ago.
Yeah, I think 2007. I think 2009, because it came to PS4. Or PS3, rather, when Infinite came out. So that would have been way later. Probably 2011 or 12. I think it was 12. But, yeah. She played it for the first time. She had no idea. And then there was someone else on IGN who wrote an article the other day who they played Bioshock for the first time, and they didn't get spoiled on that. So it's, like, interesting to see these people who play, especially games like that, where it has, like, a big, you know, twist in it or something. But, yeah. Interesting documentary. It's about 22 minutes long. I'll have to watch it later. I like watching video game documentaries. I mean, that's why, you know, NoClip's such great when they do their big video game stuff, although I haven't watched much of their content recently. It's been all smaller stuff. Moving on. Sekiro Shadows Die Twice has sold 2 million copies in less than 10 days, which is good news for people who like From Software games. I'm curious what Activision
From Software just can't go wrong with their stuff nowadays.
Yeah, I'm wondering how Activision is, like, what they expected it to do. And like, obviously they just publish it. They don't own From Software. They're just being a publishing partner. But
I'm sure they expected more because it's Activision. But FromSoft usually hits like the 5 million mark, don't they?
You know, I'm trying to think. Probably, but it's, like I said, that's only 10 days. So I'm sure in a couple months or lifetime sales after, you know, by the next one, I guess. I've never actually looked deep into the numbers for the original games.
Yeah, I think they usually hit like the 5 million mark, but yeah, not quickly. I mean, they hit it as like a lifetime sales thing, and shit, I wish I remembered their names more. Someone spoke publicly about the company saying how happy they were with how well their games sold, like that from their point of view, their games sold ridiculously well, and they were really proud of it.
Yeah, that's like a lot of, you know, not smaller, but I guess you can say smaller team-wise studios, we'll say that, were like, they, like Pseudo 51, their games, the way they sell, or, man, I'm totally blanking on the other, the other game, I have to look them up later, but like this other studio, where the games might sell, you know, a million, but they're very, especially if they're like a niche title, and it's like, for them, it's like, this is fantastic. But obviously compared to, especially if it's an exclusive, but
it's just cool seeing them actually excited about numbers as opposed to people that are getting like 5 million and going, oh my God, we're doomed. We're all going out of business.
Yeah. But I think it also could vary between studios where they take way too long to develop something like that. So I'm curious how, I'm really looking forward to Days Gone, which comes out in a couple weeks. But that game's obviously been in development for a long time. Now we see that with stuff like God of War, where that game was in development for 5 years, but it does really well. And I'm curious how much for, obviously Sony's not gonna be like, all right, that, you know, you did well, but that took 5 years, Corey. They're not gonna get rid of Sony Santa Monica.
Sony Santa Monica gone.
Yeah, just out. They just collapse and get absorbed by Microsoft in their Santa Monica studio.
Oh God, that'd be so sad. But, by the way, I met Laura Bailey.
I think you mentioned this. This sounds familiar.
This is a Comic-Con. I met her. She was ridiculously cool.
That's what I hear. I mean, all her, anytime she does like panels, she always seems like a pretty cool person. Let's see. Moving on, we officially got name changes available on the PSN. There are some caveats, of course, which were talked back during the beta as well. But the PlayStation will tell you immediately, like, hey, there's some problems if you do switch your name. Here's all the game, and like with links to the games that they know have problems. Mainly, they looked at like all the popular games, like the biggest games there are. Like, here's things that will give you problems. Here's things that will give you major problems, and here's the games that are totally fine. And of course, anything after April 1, 2018 is good to go. But I'd imagine if you're someone who has a shitty PSN name, like, just change it. And I mean, that all the games they list to are like super old stuff. Like, if you're a diehard PlayStation fan, you've already played these games. And aside from a couple of the games as services kind of thing, like Warframe was one that had a big problem. If you change your name, it's like, okay, if you're playing Warframe, then just don't do it. But like, if it's Last of Us or any game that had a multiplayer, it's like, are you really going back and playing those multiplayer games anymore? I feel like if your name's that shitty, just clean slate it. But I saw someone of my friends, it was kind of annoying me because they changed their name, and it doesn't, I wish it would kind of also give you a push notification, like, hey, by the way, you know, Isley changed his name to Drizzly, or I don't know, you know, just tell me that way when I look at my friends list and I'm like, who the fuck is White Chocolate? And then
I was wondering about that, actually, of if it would, like, for friends or something, say in parentheses who the original name was. I'm actually glad you mentioned that that's not the case.
Yeah, it's like I can't tell. I had, the only way I could tell with this one person on my friends list, like, they changed their name once to, like, I think it was like White Chocolate, and then, but the only reason I noticed was because their icon is still the same, and it's a very unique icon. Like, I'm assuming it's one you can find on the PSN, but I've never seen anyone on my friends list ever use it. And they were using it prior to the name change. And then they changed it from White Chocolate to another name. And then I'm like, within like the same day, I'm like, it's like $10 to do that. You just like, yeah, I don't want the White Chocolate name. I'm just going to go to this other one. But it was really weird. And I'm like, man, what's going on here? But
are you going to change your name?
No, I don't know why. I use my name across everything, Reddit, PSN, and it's like anything that lets me do a username, it's like I just continue to use the same thing. There's no reason for me to use anything different. Unless, like, the only problem I had was, I think once when YouTube first came out, I used my regular name, but then something happened, I forget what it was. Like, I lost my email or something like that. So I couldn't log in. So I had to make a new account, and I just modified it a bit to still have my name there, but have a different prefix. And then I think on Justin TV, my name was taken. And then so when Twitch came out, or when Justin TV was out, I used a very similar acronym for the start, and then my name for the end, and then I just do that variation. But that's the only, Twitch is the only one where I don't have the same name on it, but which kind of bugs me, but oh well. But yeah, I just use it everywhere. Just figure, might as well. But yeah, that's there. You can go ahead and if you need to change your name, check it out. Again, it will tell you the games that have problems. But yeah, I mean, you should be good, especially if you haven't, I mean, if you haven't played those games as well, you're good to go. But yeah, if you have any progress, depending on the game, it might give you trouble. And moving on, we have the Fortnite 8.3 patch went up this week for everyone. The millions of people are still playing that, and it added reboot fans, which is their version of respawning, like from Apex. These were shown in the creative mode a couple weeks, I want to say like a month ago, so we knew they were on their way. That happens a lot where stuff that they're items that they're working on always show up in creative mode, and then especially items that are that spawn on the map itself that aren't live in the game, they'll show up there. That's how people always leak, like, hey, I found this vending machine, and then a little while later the vending machines come out. But yeah, they work very similarly to, the system works very similar to Apex, where when your friends die, they drop a tag. You have 90 seconds to pick it up. And then once you do, you take it to a reboot van. And anybody in your squad can revive your buddies. You don't have to be the person who picked up the card. And the vans are all across the map at every major point of interest. So compared to Apex, there's way more respawn spots in Fortnite. And then they drop back in. You, by default, you respawn with a pistol, which is nice, versus Apex where you don't. You have to, if you respawn, you have nothing, which is kind of the balance they did for the reviving people in that game, which I thought was a good trade-off. But then, yeah, you respawn, and then the van goes down and has a timer before it can. I want to say it's a 3-minute timer on the van. Yeah, but there's because like in Apex, once you use a respawn beacon, it's done. No one else can use it. And whereas in Apex, it does a drop ship that comes in, so everyone knows that the revive station's been used. In Fortnite, the van just does this like loud horn honk real quick, and that's kind of it. So at least there's still, I don't know what the sound range is on that. Like, obviously it's not going to be as far as a sniper rifle shot, but yeah, there is something that will tell people like, hey, there's a respawn coming in over here. So yeah, that's cool to see. Haven't played much of Fortnite since season 8 started. I had a lot of problems where, and I'm wondering if it's because I stopped playing, so a lot of the files weren't pre-cached on my SSHD hybrid drive, and so when I land, all the level of detail wouldn't load in properly, so everything would be like the LOD level if you're looking at it from 1,000 meters away, but I'm right next to it, so it's just this blocky 4-polygon mess that I can't interact with, so then I can't loot anything, so I could never land anywhere and get stuff. So I stopped playing because I'm like, well, I can't play this right now, and I'm playing Apex, so I'll just go back to Apex. And I haven't been back to Fortnite that much, but the little I did play, I'm like, man, this game. It's funny because Fortnite, when that Fortnite came out, it was much faster than PUBG, obviously. And that's what some people loved about it. Like, I love, A, they love the building, and they love how quick it is. Matches are much faster. You can get around the map a lot quicker, which is great. And then playing Apex, I go back to Fortnite, and Fortnite just feels slow. I'm like, oh my god, it's so slow. But it's also kind of difficult to hop back and forth, not because it's first and third, but because Fortnite uses hit scan, and Apex doesn't. It's all projectiles. So it's leading a target versus not having to lead a target really kind of can screw you up. Plus there's, it's all based on how you're shooting in Apex. Like, you control, all your guns have recoil and kick, and there's, you know, recoil in Fortnite, but it's all bloom. It's not really recoil, so it's a little bit different there. But yeah, I think they're on week 8 of the current season. I haven't done any of the challenges. I think I might go in there one day, just one week, and just binge every weekly challenge, just only do that, not just play the big team modes, not play solos, and just do all the challenges. But because that is the one thing I do like that I wish Apex had in their battle pass, was there's no daily or weekly challenges, and I like, that's one thing I liked about Fortnite, was that even if I just hopped on, I didn't have to necessarily play solos or while I'm waiting to do a squad game. I could just go around, do some challenges, you know, get kills with X weapon type, go land on top of a teacup, go find this secret item, go do whatever. I liked that aspect about Fortnite, and I kind of hope they do some sort of challenge thing in Apex at some point, but we'll see. Aside from that, though, that's essentially it from the news. So we can probably just get into what we've been playing. So after you finished Sekiro, we talked about last week how there's no real replayability. Have you moved on to play? I saw you're playing Borderlands Game of the Year Edition.
So I have a few trophies left to get in Sekiro, and zero desire to get those trophies.
Mm-hmm.
Which sucks, because like I'm very close to the platinum. I just like they're one of them is like farming all the skill points. I'm like 30 or 40 skill points away, and skills take me like 50,000 experience at this point. I just don't want to do that. So yeah, I've kind of been playing Borderlands, and I haven't really had a desire to go back to Sekiro. And that sounds like a bad thing, and like I'm insulting the game, but I'm not. I absolutely love the game. I think it's a phenomenal game. I just stand by my opinion that it really doesn't have replayability.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, especially because the grind part of it. Like, there were no balloons that gave you XP bonuses. Like, I guess you could just die and get yourself some unseen aid. Just sit at one of the shrines, one of the statues that the idol sets right next to a big enemy that you can just backstab and then go back and respawn them and just repeat over and over and over. But maybe
yeah,
just.
Yeah, but like, I've already done the farming in all the Souls games and having to farm like rare materials and items, and this one just seems like it takes even longer. So I'll probably, you know, take a week or two off, come back to it, get frustrated because all of my skills are gone in the game, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, especially the like having to farm all the mats for the prosthetic
tools.
Oh, that
wasn't even the bad part. I have all the mats. That honestly was pretty easy. For me, it's seriously like the XP requirement of the amount of skills, because I didn't farm a lot during the game.
Yeah.
So knowing that I have millions of experience that I have to get in order to get the trophy, and nothing that's really going to give that experience quickly and efficiently, is just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's definitely, it seems like something where if you were to do, instead of saves coming and ending, it would be what you would get by doing, okay, I got this ending. Okay, now I'm going to do New Game Plus, just speed run through it and get this ending. But in the process of doing that, you would collect the skill points required and all that
right.
stuff to do it. But because...
Well, so I was hoping that New Game Plus would scale up the skill points enough that they'd essentially tailored it. So it's like, okay, if you do New Game Plus, and New Game Plus Plus, you'll get enough skill points to level up all of your stuff or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case. So I've beaten the like 30 or 40 skill points I have left. I've beaten New Game Plus and I'm still nowhere close. So the amount of skill points has to be either like 4 or 5 playthroughs worth, or like massive farming.
Yeah. I'm annoyed because I don't have the all prosthetic tools, because I missed one prosthetic tool. I mean, I could just load up and get that trophy if I wanted to, but I don't really care.
I was going to say, you can't go back and just grab that one thing.
Yeah, because I have a save right before the, after the last fight, because you can still explore before you talk to, or you go to Kuro.
Right.
And I have a save right there. I could just go grab it, but
yeah. So yeah, I've kind of been playing Borderlands as a break, which has been fun. I enjoy Borderlands a lot. I'll probably grab the platinum on it, but not the DLC ones, because holy shit, I forgot how bad like Underdome Riot was.
Yeah, that's. I think I skipped Underdome Riot was the only DLC I skipped. I think across no, because then in Borderlands 2, I skipped the Wild Game Hunt.
That one being that bad. Underdome Riot, though, was when horde modes were popular.
Yeah.
So the entire DLC is a horde mode.
Yeah, that's why I
except it's a bad horde mode. Like, it's a horde mode where you don't get experience and the drops suck.
Yeah.
So you're essentially spending time in this horde mode with zero rewards, and I started playing it, and I'm just like, oh god, I forgot how bad this was.
Yeah, I would just didn't want to do that when I saw it, because I didn't buy the, I don't think there was a, like, a season pass back then, if that was a thing. I think it was just like, here's DLC. I don't remember when season passes first came out.
I don't remember it being a season pass thing, but I remember buying Underdome and thinking, what did I do?
Yeah, I think I know I did the Captain Scarlet and her Pirate's Booty for Borderlands 2, and I did Tiny Tia's Assault and Dragon Keep. I don't know if I did Mr. Torque's Campaign of Carnage. I don't remember if I did that one or not. But yeah, I skipped the Big Game Hunt DLC, Sir Hamlock's Big Game Hunt. I was like, nope.
Borderlands 2 across the board had pretty decent DLC.
It did. The problem was that when Captain Scarlet and her Pirate's Booty came out, it came out on the 16th of October 2012. And the problem with that was there was some good stuff that came out between the release of Borderlands 2 and the first DLC. Because, see, let's go. Video games, 2012. Video game releases, 2012. But, yeah, because then when it came out, I was like, yeah, I don't have time, so I don't remember when I went back to it. Oh, my God, this fucking A to Z. I don't want A to Z. I want release date. God damn, I hate it. It sorts by popularity. I'm like, no. Oh, this IMDb is a shitty site for you. Look, why did I click on that link? Here we go. Oh, my God, this is not. Why did I go to IMDb? There we go. 2012 in gaming. Wikipedia is the better option. But, yeah, because Borderlands came out in, I want to say September, right? Borderlands.
I can't remember.
Let's do six matches. September 18th was Borderlands. And then after Borderlands, the next big release was, we had Resident Evil 6 on October 2nd, which obviously wasn't good, but I did play it.
which obviously wasn't good.
Well, because that was like a game, it's like, you know, I wanted to play it just to see how it was. And the one camp, the Leon campaign was good. That was a good campaign. And it was still fun co-op because I played it co-op.
I just liked how definitively you stated that, which obviously wasn't good.
Yeah, obviously wasn't good. But yeah, then Dishonored came out on the 9th. So that's 3 days before the DLC. So I played Dishonored because I'm like, oh, this game seems pretty cool. And yeah, it's like then I was stuck playing that. Then Doom 3 BFG Edition came out on PSN. And I was like, well, I want to replay this. And yeah, then, oh man, The Witcher 2 Assassins of the King came out on Mac on October 18th. Of course, I didn't play that. But yeah, and it's just like, oh, like Metal Modern Warfighter. Yeah. And then I played Warfighter. That came out on the 23rd. The Unfinished Swan came out on the 23rd. So it's just getting hit by all these games in October. Assassin's Creed 3 came out at the end of October, so I was playing that. And it's just like, there's just too much. I'm like, yeah, I don't have time really to go back and play this
DLC.
That's
the problem is it was decent DLC that came out when a lot better stuff was coming out. Like, the DLC did not hold the candle to the other games coming out at that time.
All right, this is when the Wii U came out. I forgot the Wii U came out on November 18th.
Wii U!
All these Wii U titles getting released. But yeah, I was just like, nah, I got too much play. I forget when I finally went back and played it. Because yeah, then Far Cry 3 was in December. And so it's like, it's just I had everything covered between then, so I think I played it in maybe January, February of 2013, because it was fun. Because I did finish it. I never did finish the, because the problem I had with the Tiny Tina DLC was I don't remember what happened, but it was one of those things where I don't know if it was like, oh, kind of like how it felt like almost like a Bloodborne situation where if you did the DLC before you beat the game, this level scaling of the enemies seemed very, you know, normal. But if you beat the game and did the DLC on New Game Plus, suddenly it felt like, oh man, these enemies feel way tougher. I think there was something about that with Tiny Tina's where it just felt like, I don't know, it felt like the enemies were way stronger than they should have been at the time. But I had a lot of fun with the beginning of it because I like the whole, you know, and then there was a dragon. And it's like the dragon appears, like, there wasn't a dragon. It's like, oh, there was no dragon. The dragon just goes away. I thought that was really cool.
I remember thinking Tiny Tina was funny in the DLC, but not finishing it for some reason. And I can't remember why, but I definitely at some point actively was like, nah, I'm not going to finish this DLC. And I'm wondering if it was the enemy level scaling and it was just annoying or something.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but yeah, I didn't finish it, but yeah, I did play the majority of it. But yeah, I went and I watched like this whole story breakdown of Borderlands, the pre-sequel, to figure out what happened in that game, since Borderlands 3 is going to be coming out later this year. I'm like, well, I'm not going to play this game, but I'll watch and find out what happens story-wise.
I kind of want to play the pre-sequel. I never played it before.
My cousin said he was playing it because he tried to replay it because he has the Handsome Jack collection.
Right.
And he was saying something about just the low gravity sections of the game, which people loved in the review at the time. He said just doesn't feel good, and the game doesn't feel, because of that, makes it slow. And then because of everything that's come out since then, that he's played, it's like, which is kind of the problem. Like I said, once I play Apex, going back to any other shooter that isn't as quick just feels way slowed down. Like, go from Apex to Metro and you're like, my God. But
I will say, I've been enjoying Borderlands, and I still think it's a phenomenal game and it has a lot of great moments in it, there are definitely parts where you see the design decisions they made that just don't hold up to the test of time.
Yeah.
Which is the case with all games. Like, it still aged well. It's just there are definitely parts where you're like, oof, yeah. X and Y game figured out how to do this system that you tried way, way better than you. Like, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But, yeah, I wouldn't mind, like, replaying, like, especially when, like, you're like, oh, I'm replaying. I'm like, oh, well, I think it was pretty cheap to get the game edition. Like, oh, I could see possibly replaying that. But if the problem is that Borderlands 3 comes out so soon that I don't want to kind of burn myself on that formula.
Well, that and the co-op didn't work on the launch for Borderlands, so...
For the launch of the game of the year or the launch of Borderlands in general?
Game of the year. The co-op didn't work at launch. Hmm. And they actually just patched it yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And I was trying it out, and I honestly forgot how frustrating it was to play Borderlands with someone else.
Why? In what way?
So you have shared loot in the game as opposed to each person sees their own thing.
Yeah.
So I forgot how frustrating it was when you have one person that just runs by all the enemies, gets all the chests, loots everything, and then comes back to help kill afterwards. And it's like, dude, like, why are you even playing together if this is all you want to do?
Yeah.
Like, if all you want to do is run by the enemies and grab the chests before the other person, like, why are you even playing the game with someone else right now?
Yeah, that's like you get that in Apex when you play with randoms, where it's like maybe you get downed or something, or there's no loot etiquette. Like, I kill two people, and then the third one gets down, and then I go to pick up her teammate, and I go to loot the two people that I killed, and the teammate's just over there just, oh, I'll take the level 3 body shield, the backpack, this attaches. I'm like, you motherfucker. I'm like, I had a game yesterday where it was like, I died. We landed in some stupid spot. I hate the fucking bunker, man. Don't ever... Listen, people out there, don't go bunker. It's a dumb place to go. It's got shitty loot, and there's no reason to go there. go to Skulltown if you're going to do anything. But So we land, and like it gets spicy, and I get two kills, help down this third guy, but then I have like no ammo at all. So we go to the other end, and then I end up, we're doing this weird back and forth, up and down situation with these teams that keep showing up. We end up finally killing everybody. I bleed out. The guy picks up my tag, goes, revives me. I come back, and then I go to my chest, and I'm like, also I notice one of my guns is gone. And I'm like, I flip, and they both have mics, so I flip out my mouth like, yo, which one of you took my 301? And like, oh my bad, was your box? Here, take this back. And I was like, yeah, that's goddamn right. Fucking take my weapons.
Oh my bad, you caught me.
Well, because I think when you loot other player boxes, enemies, I think their name pops in red. And if you loot a teammate's box, it's in the names in blue. It's like, oh, this is JCM's death box. And I think if they're moving too quick, they don't notice. But I was like,
that's so cute that you think the best of them.
Well, like he apologized, like, oh my bad. Like usually it's rare that it ever happens that people loot your box. But in this case it was like just because there was also a good amount of boxes around from the menus that we did kill. So I think they just didn't realize that. And we were so low on ammo. We're trying to find anything. But yeah, loot etiquette in that game's like, come on, man.
Yeah, that was pretty much my issue with Borderlands, of the particular people that I had available to play the game with did not have the best of loot etiquette.
Yeah. It's the hit and miss you'll have, too. I mean, in Borderlands, usually it's like you play with people and they're like, I think they're in 2, I don't know if they patched it into the game or a different one, but I know in 2 they had like, oh, you can have like an open lobby and anybody can join you. Which I never did, because I ain't doing that. But
because fuck that.
Yeah, but you get that with playing Apex. I mean, there's so many millions of people playing. Like, yeah, you're going to get some people who do have proper loot etiquette or call stuff out properly. Like, hey, there's a level 3 body piece over here. And, like, they know you need one or something. It's like,
right. But
you'll get those people that don't. Or maybe they're 10. I don't know. That's why. But, yeah, since I finished Akira, I did the first episode of the Spider-Man DLC, and I figured because I just wanted to play them for the story, which I think I might do when I play the Assassin's Creed DLC, is I just bumped it down to I want the story difficulty, so like the easiest it could be. But then I had this problem where, like, I'm doing that, but then the opening part of the second DLC is like, it's just a really long fight because you're trying to distract all these bad guys so the police can sneak their way into this building to go get this bad guy, and the fight goes on for a long time. But because it's on easy, all the enemies go down in like just one combo string, and I'm like, well, now it just feels kind of boring because it's too easy. And I'm like, but I don't want to put it back up to hard because I don't want to artificially extend it.
I want a story, and then you complain that it's too easy. Did you want the easy mode in Sekiro 2?
No, because my problem was that if the fight didn't last for 20 hours, because this was a long fucking fight in the opening of this DLC, like, had it been like the standard, oh, here's a wave of 8 guys, take them out, and then maybe one guy with a rocket launcher shows up, I'm like, that can be over pretty quick. And it's like, bam, I'm in the story, which is what I want. But this is like, oh, you're locked in this, even though it's on easy, we don't decrease the amount of time that it takes to do this. You still have to kill, you know, 50 bad, or kill, knock out 50 bad guys, you know what I mean? That come in these waves of 10. And it's like, because I'm stuck in this long-ass combat, I wished in that moment, like, oh, I should just bump it up. So at least I'm having fun being stuck in this bad guy purgatory. And then bump it down later on, because it's like, yeah, it's just the individual fights, the small little one-offs, like, oh, here's 3 bad guys. It's like, I just want to get it over with so I can get to the story. But then because right. I got locked in, I'm like, well, now it's backfired on me. But yeah, I'm enjoying the DLC so far. I did the first one, seemed interesting. I'm about, the problem is, like, when you see your percentage completion for the DLC, it says like, oh, you're 25% complete, but that includes everything. So it's like story, collectibles, side missions, which I'm not doing any of the side stuff like from the main game. Like, what's her face shows up, the webcam psycho. I forget her name, from the main game. She pops up again, and she's like you have to do one of her side missions in order to progress the story. But then her things pop up. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do those because I don't want to do them. So then now when I beat the first DLC, it's like, oh, you had 72% completion. And I'm like, so now when I'm playing the second one, it's like, oh, you're at 25%. It's like, yeah, but how much of that is actual story? Like, how many more story missions do I have? But it's fine. Some interesting stuff they do. I can see why some people had issue, like, because a lot of the DLCs, I think they only got like 7 across. Like, I think the first one got like an 8 something kind of across the board, and the second one's, I think, got 7. Like, saying they're okay. And even Ted Price acknowledged, you know, in is it either him or, yeah, I think it was saying, like, he acknowledged in one interview that, you know, he realizes that a lot of people, they look at what people liked about the content and what people didn't like, and they're taking that into account for future stuff. So obviously that could mean for future Spider-Man projects, but yeah, then aside from that, I haven't been playing much. Because once I finish Spider-Man, I'm going to play the Assassin's Creed, the First Blade DLC arc, since that's complete. And then I'll just, well, actually, unless it takes me so long to finish Spider-Man that, because I keep playing Apex now, that Days Gone will come out, because Days Gone will be out here on the 26th.
I didn't realize Days Gone was coming out so soon.
Yeah, 2 weeks from yesterday. Well, technically, if they didn't delay it, it would have already been out back during the day on the
February or something.
Yeah, February 20, the day when everything came out. It would have been out then, which I'm glad it didn't.
Game where I went from not being excited about it at all to actually looking forward to it quite a bit.
Yeah, I just want to. I like open worlds, and I have this motorcycle that I need to, you know, take care of, siphon gas kind of stuff, and just drive around. It's like, I look forward
to. For me, just the marketing on that game at the start was horrible.
Yeah, especially the E3 with the double trailers for it was so weird, but
it was horrible. But the game itself actually looks really cool. I just hope that their marketing method didn't turn people off from it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I always thought about playing. I wanted to play because I got Far Cry 3 Classic Edition when I did the season pass for Far Cry 5, but they didn't make it run at 60 on PS4 and Xbox One, which kind of bugs me. Like, I wish they could have just bumped it up a bit. So it still runs at 30, so I'm kind of like, eh. And I think it has some frame pacing problems because it just doesn't feel as good.
You and your picky 60 frame.
Well, it's not necessarily my problem with frame rate. Typically comes down, like, I'm fine with 30, even for an FPS game. 30, totally fine. But it comes down to two additional things. Frame pacing is the big one. And then how they do their motion blur. Because you could have bad motion blur in a 30 game, and then it just feels like hot garbage. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm all nauseated when I pan the camera left and right. Like, maybe do per object motion blur, but then you can have problems with that as well, and that also costs much more, you know, overhead from the system to actually do. But yeah, it all depends on all the other systems, the anti-aliasing, the motion blur, you know, all that stuff. Like, at 30, like, if that's on point, 30 feels totally fine. Like Uncharted, that's fine. Sekiro, well, Sekiro ran at sub 50, but that was fine. But like, yeah, it just depends on the game. Like, I've had games, it's like, man, it just, and unfortunately that Far Cry just, now that I've played, you know, 4 and 5, going back to 3, which was a PS3 game, just, you can tell that it doesn't feel quite as good. Because obviously that they've upgraded their Dunai engine since 2. But yeah, other than that, haven't been playing a whole lot. Just waiting for, just chip away at DLC and then wait for more stuff.
Yep, a lot of good stuff coming up there.
Yep. Definitely interested in what E3 is going to have this year too. And then when this
Even
is done,
Sony's not at E3.
Yeah, well, I'm curious about what the other company, because obviously Microsoft will still have third-party devs at their thing, so it'd be curious to see like who shows up at their stuff. And then if Sony releases one of their little, you know, Sony Directs in June.
But, what are we calling those? Are they Sony Directs?
No, they're called something else. They're called PlayStation, Inside PlayStation, I think. I don't know. I forget. But yeah, maybe they'll do another one of those, but who knows? Anyways, well, I guess that'll wrap it up. Oh, man, we didn't really talk about the ending of Sekiro, but I guess we could talk about that later. I mean, we talked so much about the lore of Sekiro. Yeah, I don't think that... I'm getting super hungry right now. And there's not much I could really... I feel like even if I speculated about it, there wouldn't be much there because we talked so much about the other stuff. But anyways, maybe we'll talk about that later once Zai's further along and she can talk more about the stuff that we weren't able to talk about before.
Yep.
Anyways, all right, well, that will wrap it up for this episode. Thank you all for tuning in and listening. Thank you, Izzy, for joining.
Yep.
And we will see you all next time.
Later.